about you this morning, but it's definitely my prayer that I get to the place where Jesus really is enough for me and my life actually shows that. God, help us to live like that. Amen. You guys can have a seat. Well, good morning. I'm so glad that you guys are here. Thank you for being here. If you don't know, my name is Rick, and I get to be the lead pastor here. We really do hope that you'll take advantage of those connection cards that you find inside your bulletin, or if you're online with us, you can find that link for the connection card online. And here's why this is so important, because this is a way for us to connect with you, especially through prayer. We want to be praying for you, so let us know what's going on in your life and how we can be praying for you, because every week our team gathers and we pray for you guys, because we need your prayers and you need us praying for you as well. Well, we're going to continue our teaching series, Chasing Hope That's Driven by Faith. This morning, here's our question. What is slowing you down in your pursuit of hope? What's slowing you down in your pursuit of Jesus, because that's that he is our hope. So what's slowing you down? For some of us, isn't it our career? Doesn't our job slow us down because we put so much focus in chasing that we lose sight of what life is really about? It's really about Jesus. Is it a relationship? You aren't pursuing hope, you aren't pursuing Jesus because you gotten sidetracked with another relationship, not the relationship with Jesus. You want that relationship so bad, you know, you're just so off focus. Or maybe for you, it's what's slowing you down in your pursuit are those negative thoughts. Those negative thoughts that you hear in your voice, those untrue statements that aren't true, those voices that you hear in your head that you aren't good enough, that you will never measure up, and that you just can't. I wonder if that's slowing you down in your pursuit, in the hope of who Jesus is. You know, we've been going between the book of Joshua and the book of Hebrews. And notice what the author of the book of Hebrews says about us being slowed down. Hebrews chapter 12 and verse number 1. Therefore, since we are surrounded by such a huge crowd of witnesses to the life of faith, let us strip off every weight that slows us down. That pursuit of the career, the job, that relationship, those voices that we hear in our head, that's the weight that slows us down. But then the author says this, especially the sin that so easily trips us up. So not only can it be some things in our life that necessarily in and of themselves aren't bad or sinful, but they become sinful because all of our focus goes there and not to Jesus, but he says this. He says there's a sin that trips us up. And today, that's what we're going to talk about, is this idea of sin. Sin in the New Testament is defined with this Greek word, and it comes from that Greek culture of archery, of when they are shooting at the target, but they miss the mark, they miss the target. That's a sin. That's what they would call it back then, because they've missed the mark. And that's what sin is in our lives. We've missed the mark. What was the mark? The mark is God's plan. And that's why we could define sin as anything that is less than God's plan. Sin is anything that's less than God's plan. When sin came into the world, it was not God's plan. I mean, in fact, he had told, you know, them to stay. He told Adam and Eve to stay away from that tree. Don't eat of that fruit right there. That wasn't God's plan. And then sin entered into the world. And as a result, we have a broken world. We live in this broken world. We have disease and death because of sin. Do you reflect much on sin? Our culture doesn't like to do that. The culture that we live in, we don't like to reflect on our sin. But do you realize that we're actually in a season in church history that the church has been in for hundreds of years? They reflect 40 days. We're in this Lent season. 40 days before Easter is the Lent season. Lent is 40 days before Easter, reflecting on sin and all that it cost. And Christ followers, for the Christ followers in the room or online that's listening, this would be a good rhythm for you to get into, where you take these 40 days before Easter and you reflect on the devastating effects that sin has caused, where you are intentional about looking out and around you in the world that we live in, and we think, oh my goodness, look all that sin has destroyed. And then we turn it inwardly. And we ask ourselves, because in this season of Lent, it's reflecting on your own sin that is hindering you in your relationship with God. See, what's slowing you down in your relationship with God? It's that sin that easily sets us up, trips us up, and keeps us from attaining hope or renewing the hope. Because here's what we're going to see today. Sin destroys, but hope renews. And that's what Jesus wants to do in your life. He wants to renew your hope. But sin actually steals that. It kills that. It destroys it. That's what sin does. And I wonder today, which are you experiencing? Destruction or renewal? Are you experiencing destruction or are you experiencing renewal in your life? Let's take our Bibles. I hope that you have your Bible, whether it's on your phone, but go to Joshua chapter 7. Joshua chapter 7, we're going to pick up the story in Joshua chapter 7. Remember last week where we left off? Last week where we left off was they had walked around those walls of Jericho, right? And they were following God's command. And for 6 days, they were silent. On that seventh day, it was seven times. And then it was those loud ram's horns blown by the priest and a loud shout, right? And the walls came crashing down. And the people of Israel went right in. And they were given a very clear command, and that is destroy everything. Destroy everything that's in there and set some of the dedicated things apart for me, for the temple. That was the command. Do not take anything, because nothing in the city of Jericho is yours. Why? Because it was a first fruits, if you will. Because this is their first military conquest, was Jericho. They weren't supposed to take anything back with them. And then, as sin does, sin entered. Joshua chapter 7 and verse number 1. He gives us an overview of what happened in this one verse. But Israel violated the instructions about the things set apart for the Lord. A man named Achan had stolen some of the dedicated things. So the Lord was very angry with Israelites. Achan was the son of Carmi and the descendant of Zimri, son of Zerah of the tribe of Judah. Just in case you wanted to know his family tree, it's all there, right? But isn't it interesting that a man, one man named Achan, but yet Israel is the one who violated. Israel is the one who has sinned. Sin has devastating effects. Now, we get into the details, like what happened? What did this guy Achan do? Well, let's find out in verse number 2. Joshua sent some of his men from Jericho to spy out the town of Ai, east of Bethel, near Beth-Aven. When they returned, they told Joshua, There's no need for all of us to go up there. It won't take more than 2,000 or 3,000 men to attack Ai. Since there are so few of them, don't make all of our people struggle to go up there. This was quite the hike. Jericho is about 800 feet above sea level. And where they're headed to Ai is about 2,500 feet above Jericho in a short distance. It was like less than 15 miles. So, I mean, that's quite the climb that they're having to climb up there. So here they go. So approximately 3,000 warriors were sent. So they sent 3,000 to go and take this city, but they were soundly defeated. The men of Ai chased the Israelites from the town gate as far as the quarries, and they killed about 36 who were retreating down the slope. Sin destroys. Sin has effects on not just your life, but on those around you. 36 people lost their life. The whole community, the Israelites, were paralyzed with fear at this turn of events, and their courage melted away. Sin had an effect on the whole community, all million plus of the people. Their fear, now they're filled with fear because of the action of one man. That's what sin does. Joshua and the elders of Israel tore their clothing in dismay, threw dust on their heads, and bowed face down to the ground before the ark of the Lord until evening. This was the leader's response. Was a remorse, because this was in their culture. This is what they would do to show remorse. But they had also do this, Joshua and the elders, they did this out of frustration, out of, God, what are you doing? God, we know that you are God, because remember, the ark of the Lord is symbolic of God's presence. So they come in faith, and with an act of faith, the bowing before that, and it says that they're there all day. But then Joshua breaks the silence with this prayer. Notice verse 7. Then Joshua cried out, "O sovereign Lord, why? Why did you bring us across the Jordan River?" See, that's what sin does. Sin has you start questioning God. God, why? Why did you do this? Sin makes us want to put the blame on God. That's what sin does. Why did you bring us across the Jordan River if you were going to let the Amorites kill us? If only we had been content to stay on the other side. You see what sin does? Sin erases the memory of the victory. That's what sin does. Remember, it was just days ago they had victory crossing all million plus people across the Jordan River on dry ground. Remember that? We talked about that. And then last week we just talked about how they had victory as they marched around those walls. You see what sin does? Come on. I found myself in that place, haven't you? Where all of a sudden we forget what God can do and we start questioning God, why? But the Lord said to Joshua, "Get up," in verse number 10. "Why are you lying on your face like this?" It's almost like this isn't a time for this. It's a call to action. There's something else going on here. And God tells him exactly what's going on in verse 11. "Israel has sinned and broken my covenant." Remember what the covenant was in chapter 1? We talked about this. The covenant was this: if you study my word and meditate on day and night and do everything that I command you, then you will succeed. That's the covenant. That's the promise. But God says, Israel. Notice too the plurality here. How God holds the community accountable. Israel has sinned and broken my covenant. They have stolen. He's not singling out Achan. He's not saying, oh, that one man. He's saying they have stolen some of the things that I commanded must be set apart for me. And they have not only stolen them, but have lied about it and hidden the things among their own belongings. Do you see how pluralistic this is? That's what sin does. Sin has effects, not just on you, but on those around you. And then he says, and that's why the Israelites are running from their enemies in defeat. I wonder if you might be experiencing defeat right now because of someone else's sin. You're experiencing the consequences of somebody else's choices, or maybe even your own. I wonder. God is like, that's why. It's not me. For now Israel itself has been set apart for destruction. I will not remain with you any longer unless you destroy the things among you that were set apart for destruction. And then he tells Joshua, he says, get up, command the people to purify themselves in preparation for tomorrow. For this is what the Lord, the God of Israel, says. Hidden among you, O Israel, are things set apart for the Lord. You will never defeat your enemies until you remove the things from among you. So what we need to do, what God is saying, you need to deal with your sin. You and I need to deal with our sin. We need to do some soul searching. We as Christ followers, we should be in a regular rhythm of doing exactly of what Psalms 138 tells us to do. Tells us to search our heart. It's a prayer back to God. Oh God, search my heart and know me and try me and see if there's anything that, any anxious thought, anything that offends you. And then point it out to me. Why? So then I can walk in the way of righteousness. And that's what God is telling them that they need to do. And I wonder about in your life, what is it that you need to remove? So they go through this process. They, in the Old Testament, they would have this process called casting the lots. And using that process, they were dependent upon the God to point the lot to who this person was. And here's how they were going to do. They were going to start with tribes. First, they were going to get representative from all the tribes. And then the lot would be cast towards that tribe. And then after they found that tribe, then they would go to clans. Tribes and then clans. And then they would see which clan does it fall on. And then they would go to families. And then it would fall on the families. And then within that family, then it would fall upon the person. And so this was a big process that was going on. All the while, Achan is staying hidden in the background. All the while, Achan is back there thinking, I hope they don't find out it's me. That's what sin does. Sin wants to make us hide. Sin wants to make us justify what we have done. But finally, he couldn't be hidden any longer. It couldn't be hidden. The sin couldn't be. It finally, through this process, it worked itself down right to Achan, and it was pointed out. Joshua confronts him. And here is Achan's response in verse number 20. And Achan replied, it is true. I have sinned against the Lord, the God of Israel. Do you hear what he's saying? He's just saying, yeah, I got caught. This isn't repentance. And what I really wondered this as I was processing this text and studying this week, I was thinking, I wonder, would the outcome have been different for Achan and his family if he would have came forward as soon as he heard the announcement the day before, purify yourself. Somebody has sinned and God's going to deal with it. I wonder if he would have came running forward and said, Joshua, don't worry about going through the whole lots and casting of lots from the tribe and then the clans and then the families and then the heads of the family. Don't worry about all of that. It was me. I sinned and I'm sorry. Forgive me. I wonder if it would have been different. But here He's caught. He knows it. And then here's what he says. Among the plunder I saw. Now just think about this. See, this is what sin does. Sin blinds you to the reality. That wasn't plunder there in Jericho. That was set aside. Everything in that town, in that city of Jericho, was supposed to be set aside, dedicated to God. He saw it as plunder, which means that's mine. And so he saw it. This is the steps of sin. I saw a beautiful robe from Babylon, 200 silver coins and a bar of gold weighing more than a pound. I saw it. I wanted it. Isn't that what happens with sin? We see it. We let it sit there in our mind and we fester and we think, oh, what if? And then it turns into this desire, I want that so bad. And then where does it go from I want it to I took it? It leads to an action. That's why we have to deal with it here when it first enters, instead of let it festering up until it leads to an action. Anytime we want something more than we want Jesus, sin. Anytime that we want to do something that's less than God's best for us, that's sin. Here's a question that we need to ask. Is this choice worth the consequences? And you find yourself in this process of I saw, I want, and I took. We need to ask ourselves this question. Is it worth the consequence? I don't typically share. I've never shared this story publicly. I have an older brother who's 8 years older than I am. And when my brother was a teenager, I watched my brother make choices that I saw brought devastating effects to my mom and my dad. And I thought to myself, I can't do that. I don't want to hurt my mom and dad. And so that hit me young, thinking about the choices that I make as a teenager actually affects other people. But then I'd watch my brother continue. He would go off in the Marines. He became part of their powerlifting team. He started having all this money. He had the sports car and the motorcycle and even let me have his motorcycle one time while he was stationed in Okinawa. It was amazing. But then my brother gets out of the Marine Corps, gets a great job working for Sikorsky in Connecticut, building helicopters there. But those choices he made as a teenager turned into an addiction. He ends up losing his wife. And when I would try and talk to him about his addiction, he would deny it. I don't have a problem. I'd say, but what happened in your marriage? That was because of that. He would get remarried to somebody else. In his second marriage, he had two girls. He gets another good job at an Air Force base in Oklahoma. And there in Oklahoma, his addiction continues to control his life. And he ends up losing his girls because of his addiction. And then he loses his wife because of his addiction. And my brother, who was once time a big, rock-solid Marine Corps guy, he ends up homeless. My brother. Because of sin. Because of choices. My brother is still homeless to this day. doesn't matter how much our family reaches out to him. Can I just tell you, my mom and dad, they still cry. They still cry. I don't know what your sin is. It has devastating effects, not just on your life, but on the people who love you. Sin kills. Sin stills. Sin destroys. And that's exactly what happened to Achan. Achan lost his life. He lost his family. He lost everything he owned because of sin. Because he saw, he wanted, and he took. We need to deal with our sin because it always has consequences. And when we deal with it, then comes hope. And that's why after dealing with the sin, hope is renewed, and we see that in the city. We see that in the people of Israel. If you look at Joshua chapter 8, in Joshua chapter 8 and verse number 1, in short, here's what happened. And then the Lord said to Joshua, "Do not be afraid or discouraged." There's the renewal of the hope that you don't have to be lost anymore. You don't have to feel that your hope is gone. That God will actually renew your hope. You don't have to live that way anymore. And my brother continues to live that way, and now he's literally lost part of his mind. He disappears for days, sometimes weeks at a time, and nobody knows where he is. My sister can't get a hold of him. My parents can't get a hold of him. Why? Because he has refused to allow hope to renew him. You today, you and I can be renewed. We don't have, we can make that turn now. You and I, we can choose to have our hope renewed and to be full of hope. Because that's what God does. And he comes back into the people's lives. And he's like, "Hey, you don't have to be paralyzed with fear anymore." Remember? That's where they were. But after they dealt with it, then he says, "Oh, be strong. Have courage." Why? Because you dealt with it. Church, we've got to deal with our sin. It affects the community. So that's why the very first next step says this: I don't need to be afraid or discouraged because today I'm thankful and resting in God for the hope that He gives after I fail. And let me tell you, I've been there many times. I have failed many times. But there's hope. When we come, there's hope. He renews it. And I wonder if that's where you're at. Are you finding your hope after failure in who Jesus is? Well, we want to pray for you. Pray for me in this way, and I want to pray for you in this way. The other next step says this. It says, my sin has had consequences, not just for me, but for others as well. I will seek to make it right with God and those around me. Oh, don't end up continuing to justify and pretend like it's not there. Just get it right. Just confess. And when you do that, God promises to forgive and He will renew your hope. Here's what you can do. If it's easier for you to text that word PRAY to 401-496-9710, then just do that. And we would love to pray for you and however that we can. We're going to take a moment here and give you a chance to reflect through communion. Maybe there's some sin that you need to deal with. Now's the time to do it. Don't wait any longer. Don't put it off. You can leave here with your hope renewed if you'll just bring it to God and if you'll just confess it. He promises to forgive. And then you can have that hope again. We're going to sing this song. And as we sing this song, actually, as the band sings the song, I just want you to sit there and reflect. Have your communion ready. Because after the song, I'll come back and I'll lead us in communion.